All right, we have, this is class number two for this quarter, and we're talking about Christian attitudes and Christian attitudes towards various topics. And last week, we just did an introduction of the class where we were talking about attitudes and what is an attitude. And anyone care to share what, how do we define attitude, or how do you define attitude? What is an attitude? Okay, yeah, exactly. So it's the way that you kind of feel towards something. It's a being settled, right? You're kind of settled in your mind towards something or someone. And attitudes, as Lisa said, lead to actions, right? And so it's important that as Christians, we have an attitude, right? People say, hey, it's not good to have an attitude, but we need to have an attitude. We need to have an attitude towards a certain attitude towards topics and situations in our life. As we've talked before, I mean, this life leaves no one untouched, unscathed, one way or another, and we need to be prepared. And the more that we can think about things ahead of time and kind of know how we feel about something, then when we're presented with it, we don't have to do all the thinking in the moment. And sometimes we just react, and those reactions aren't always helpful. So we talked about a lot of different things, but this week I told you that we were going to talk about our attitude towards what? Sin. Oh, it made me feel good. Somebody listened. Okay. So our attitude towards sin. And hopefully maybe, even if it was just 10 minutes before class or on your way in the car, maybe you thought about, so what is my attitude towards sin? First, what is sin? So when we think about sin, I mean, what is sin? Okay, anything that separates us from God goes against biblical teachings. Any other thoughts?
We violate God's will.
Okay.
Or we fail to do God's will.
Okay, we violate God's will, which might be an action where we actually, or failing to do something when we should. What's something that maybe we should do that we would fail to do? Okay, evangelize. Speak up when something's wrong. To pray, to forgive, to to what?
Trust.
To trust. Okay. Okay, and our thoughts, right, which create our mindset, that is our mindset, our attitude towards things. Flip over to 1 John 3:4. 1 John chapter 3, verse 4. Someone catch that? What's that say?
Whoever commits sin also commits lawlessness, and sin is lawlessness.
Okay. So, sin is lawlessness. It goes against the law, right? It's no law. Sin doesn't have, it has no respect for law. Have we seen what that looks like? Do we see that even in our country?
Every day.
Like where people, we have, it seems like, I don't know, but it seems like we have more and more people who have no respect for law. Right, they are lawless. They live a more lawless life. They don't want to follow law. And sin is having that type of an attitude towards God's law. It's like, I just don't care, and as blatant as people are, even in our society, sometimes we and others are as blatantly rebellious towards God. Are we not? And, you know, we sit and look at things sometimes on TV and marvel as to what's going on. And does God not marvel in the same way? Right? When he looks at people spiritually, or sometimes, unfortunately, you know, even us spiritually, and he sits and he marvels, how can you be that lawless? How can you disrespect, you know, what I want?
And I think he looks at us worse that claim to be Christians, worse than the ones that don't, because we claim to know better. We proclaim that we know, and we kill one that's down in the world.
Yeah, well, and we'll look at that in just a second, actually, a verse. While we're in 1 John, though, flip over to chapter 5, verse 17. 1 John 5, 17, just a couple of chapters. What's that say?
All unrighteousness is sin, and there is a sin not leading to death. And there is a sin not leading to death. Is that what that says?
Yeah.
Not leading to death.
Yeah. So there's all unrighteousness is sin. God is what? Righteous. I mean, that is his nature. He is righteous. He is holy. He is pure. He is just. And anything that is against or different, you know, than what he is, you know, that is sin. If you look at James 4, 17, last one on this. So James 4, 17. What's that tell us?
Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him that is sin.
All right, so this is getting back to, you know, what Gary was mentioning. So what does that verse mean? So if you don't know to do good, then it's, and you don't do it, then it's not sin.
No,
there's a difference in ignorance and sin.
Don't mess with
us.
So what does this verse mean? James 4:17.
If you know what's right, then you don't do it, then it's sin.
Okay. So you know, when you know what to do, you're expected to do it. Right? I mean, that's what God expects.
Let me take little kids that don't know the difference, then that's the different story. Once you become old enough to know better, it becomes sin whether you claim to be a Christian or not. Sin is a sin.
Yeah. I'm not an attorney, but I do know in a lot of our laws, right, it's if you knew or if you should have known. Right, you can still be held accountable. Right? Just the fact that you didn't know is not an excuse. And so, if you should have known, if a reasonable person should have known, and it's pretty hard nowadays, from a spiritual perspective, particularly in the United States, to say I didn't know I mean. I got a Bible on my phone. I've got one here. There's a, you know, you can watch at home. I mean, we're on the internet. I mean, you can watch people all over the world. I mean, you talk about a time where information is flowing. All kinds of information.
It's free.
And it's everywhere, right? And it doesn't cost you anything except some time. And so if you don't know, it's kind of because you're not interested. It's not because you don't have access, right? There was a time when people did not have access to the scriptures. And they had to come to the temple, or they had to have people come and read to them because they didn't have it. And you had scribes who sat there and, you know, I mean, now it's just, it's everywhere. I mean, you download 27 apps if you want. And there's information everywhere. There's commentaries everywhere. So how is one led to sin? So we kind of know what sin is. How does one get into sin? While you're in James 1, 13 through 15. Harry, can you read that? James 1, 13 through 15.
Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil. Or does he himself tempt anyone? But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death.
All right, thank you. So verse 13 tells us what?
God's not the one tempting.
What's that?
That God's not the one tempting.
God's not going to tempt you.
No. Don't blame God.
Yeah.
He's holy.
The old comedian, you say the devil made you do it.
Did God not tempt Job?
No, he did not.
He left. Okay. So there's a difference between he allows things to happen, right? He allows you to get sick. He allows you to go through tough times. And he'll allow you to be tempted. Allowing doesn't mean
permission.
Doing.
But he provides escape.
Right. Just like with God, you know, knowing doesn't mean causing. So sometimes people, you know, and I'm getting slightly off topic, but just because God knows things that are going to happen, or he allows things to happen, like tragic things, a child might die. It doesn't mean he caused the child to die. He knew, right? He knows. He can see it coming. He allows it. It's a different study, especially human suffering. But there's, but knowing, allowing, isn't causing, it's not doing. Yeah, that's a different study as to why God allows suffering. you know, and there's some hints in there around, you know, look at Paul. I mean, he allowed Paul to suffer, and Paul prayed three times, right? That his thorn in the flesh be removed. And there's insights there as to how God views our suffering. So in this passage in James, but we're tempted when we're drawn away, right, by our own desires, our own lusts, and when that has conceived, it brings forth sin. It gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. What about before it's full grown? What does it bring? Does bring sin, so sin is sin. Okay. What are the characteristics of sin? So when you think about sin, what are some of its characteristics?
I think Tori's already said that we're separated from God.
Okay, so it separates us from God. Flip to Isaiah 59, 1 and 2. What's Isaiah 59, 1 and 2 say?
Sin separates us from God.
Yeah, can someone read it?
Behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, nor his ear heavy that it cannot hear. But your iniquities
separated you from your God, and your sins have hidden his face from you so that he will not be.
Okay. How does that passage make you feel?
I don't want to sin.
Why not?
Sin as God does.
Mm-hmm. We need to look at sin as God does. Why do you say that?
It's separating me from God. And in God there is peace and joy and love. And who don't want that? I live a part of my life without that peace, joy, and love, and patience, kindness, and goodness, and faithfulness, and gentleness, and self-control. Who don't want that? Mm-hmm. What you have tasted mm-hmm. and seen how good God is. And so now, if I sin, I feel so badly because it does hurt God. When you read through the book of Jeremiah, through Jeremiah, God is pleading with the people, come back to me. And I cannot read that book without crying. And I say, Lord, please don't help me not to stand against you, because I know how much it brings about pain in me. And so when you have that attitude, you don't want to sin. You abhor sin.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that word right?
Mm-hmm.
A-B-H-O-R.
Mm-hmm. Abhor. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you mentioned the things that you don't have when you're separated from God. So when you're in that place, how is your life? When you're in a sinful place, I mean, is that the high point for you? Okay. Yeah. Sin's like, it's like a banana. See, you're gonna remember this, anything? Oh, this just hit me. Okay, it's like a banana. You know, you peel the banana. How long does it take before that banana starts turning brown?
I don't know.
Yeah. It's not long, right? You leave a banana, I mean, it doesn't take long, right? And it starts turning. And it's kind of how sin is. Yep.
But people in the world don't realize that they're living a good life and they're being the way they want to. I'll do what I want when I want to. When the time comes, I'll be driving back. It don't work. You don't know when the time comes.
Yeah. I'm actually going to challenge that a little bit in a minute. Because are they living the good life?
In their mind, yes, they are.
Well, but even in their mind, are they living the good life? So how happy are people? How peaceful are people? How all these people that are living the good life, what's their depression rate? What's their suicide rate? What's their, you know, what's their anxiety levels? What are their, right? When you start looking at people in the world, people without God, right? And this is what I want to challenge. Go ahead, though, make your comment, Sandy.
That's
all right. Go ahead, Sandy, and then I'll come to you, Doug. Doug, we have a comment?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm not convinced still. So
I get it.
We all have. Okay. I don't think we know what good is. Right.
True.
Before we're a Christian, we don't know what good is. We think lying's good.
Yeah.
We think getting in a fight is good.
Yeah.
We think, but is it good? You know, when you think about the chaos, right? Sin doesn't only bring chaos to Christians who sin. Right? I mean, it is chaotic. It keeps feeding on itself. So when we start talking about the characteristics of sin, one, it separates us from God. What are some of the other characteristics of sin?
Deceitful.
It's deceitful. All right? Look at Hebrews 3:13. Hebrews 3:13. What does that say? Lest any of you be what?
Hardened.
What does that mean? You're hardened how? What does it say? How are you hardened? By what?
Through the deceitfulness
of sin.
You believe in the lie.
You believe in the lie. Right? It's enslaving, it's controlling. When you think back in the garden, Adam and Eve, serpent, did they not want to believe the serpent? I mean, they knew what truth was. God told them, don't do this, or you'll surely die, right? I mean, God was clear. He told them. But the serpent came and told him something just slightly different. You shall not surely die. Right? Did they not, a part of them, kind of want to believe that? Right? And that's how sin works. Like, there's enough truth there, but it's not all truth. I mean, sin doesn't have to be just crazy way off. And there's a part of us where we want to believe certain things, right? We want to believe that maybe this is okay, or we want to believe that maybe I can, you know, go this far or do that much. And that's where sin gets really confusing. It's deceitful. It lies, right? It's not honest. And it doesn't have to be really far away, right? It can be just a little bit, just enough to start to pull you away. And that's how, you know, Satan works. We already, in this same verse, it's deceitful, but it hardens. What does that mean? Like it sets up and it's like a softball or a hardball, or like what does that mean? It hardens. What does it harden? Okay, hardens your heart. What does that mean? You don't feel anymore.
And I think he said, oh, God loves you. No matter what you do, God's still going to love you. You know, and God does love us, but he don't love what we do. A lot of times we still think, oh, he loves us, he'll forgive us. Kind of like our parents, you know, when you go out and know you're afraid, you think, oh, my parents want to say it's okay. People want to forgive me. Forgiveness is a good
answer. Yeah. Becky? That's right.
It's just that, you know, because of their unbelief, their heart was hardened.
Pharaoh.
That,
yeah, Hebrews 3:8, right? Hebrews 3:8 talks about that hardening of the heart. And you have a choice as a human being, right? You follow God or you follow sin, and when you follow sin, sin enslaves you. It clings to you, right? It hangs on. It fights. And the longer it's on you and the longer it's with you, the more it starts to take over. It's progressive. Right? It doesn't just stay. It is a disease it's a progressive disease because it needs more. It's never satisfied. And to do more, their hearts harden. It hardens to good. It hardens to truth. Right? I mean, is that the life? I mean, is that the life? Is that the, hey, if I put that on a brochure, that how about, you know, a life full of you being enslaved to something, you being less sensitive, you being less present, you having less of a capability to love, to engage, to do for others, right? It becomes a life of all about you, everything you can get. Like, how does that work in relationships? How does that work in life? I mean, is this going to bring you happiness? Does it bring you happiness? It doesn't bring you happiness. It doesn't bring you happiness. Well, yeah, because he's in that environment, right? When you see it every day, the whole idea of fellowship and engagement with the church, that they have fellowship daily, right? They did in the first century with one another. I mean, think about who you're putting yourself around every day. Every day, every day are people who are striving to be what you're striving to be like Christ, to be more and more. When you're in a situation where you're in the world and see the worst of the world every day, every day, every day, that's a hard place to be, right? I mean, that's a hard place to be. And it's in those situations, too, where there's no fantasy about sin. There's no fantasy about what it brings. And you see domestic violence, and you see, you know, everything that happens over and over and over and over again. It's not to be romanticized, right? sin is not to be romanticized. It's evil. It goes against your nature and who you are. Let me ask you, why do you, you get a new car or a new used car, it's new to you, right? Do you do maintenance on the car? Is it just because you like doing maintenance? Like, do you do maintenance? Why do you do maintenance? Do you do it because the book says that you need to do maintenance? You do it because you can't afford another one? Which means what, if you don't do it? You do it because you know it's not going to last long, right? I mean, it's not because you love doing maintenance on your car. It's because you know that if I don't do this maintenance, if I don't do what they say, I'm not doing it just because the book says it, but I'm doing it because that's how it's designed. It is designed and it needs upkeep. It's the same with us as Christians. Human beings, Christian or non-Christian, are designed a particular way. They need certain things. They need God. Whether they realize they need God or not, will they run without God? Yes, they will. Not for long and not very well. But they will, and they'll break down prematurely. We are designed to run with God. We don't do it just because the book says it. Yes, we do, because we trust God and but we do it because we understand that we are better with God than without God. And my concern is that so many times, I don't know if we all believe that all the time. If we really appreciate the destruction of sin. How awful it is. How detrimental it is to families, to children, to countries, to generations. Are any of you suffering from anything that someone in a previous generation did? I bet you are. And there are confusing things. There are good things that can be taken too far. Right? I mean, is it not good to work? I mean, does the Bible not tell us that a man, if he's not going to work, then he doesn't need to eat? Right? I mean, it's good to work. Is it good to work 20 hours a week? Is it good to work 90 hours a week? Is it good to work, right, and you neglect? Is it good to work and never worship? Is it good to work to the neglect of your family? Like, but I'm supposed to work. Right? Isn't it interesting how Satan confuses everything? He can take something good. Am I not supposed to take care of my parents? You take care of your parents. What else do you neglect? Right? Satan's always biding for our time. He's always wanting in our head. He'll even try to take something good and turn it too far. Peter, I'm going to protect Christ. All right? I'm going to cut this guy's ear off. can take something good and it can go too far. So there's the clear things and then they get less clear. It's progressive in nature. We won't look at it, but 2 Timothy 3:13, if you want to look at that. Its pleasures are temporary. Hebrews 11:25. It brings spiritual death. Romans 6:23. It separates us from God. I've already asked this question, but you know, how should we feel about those who are in sin? When you think about people in sin, how do you feel about them?
You have to love them. I got a friend I grew up with, and you know, this grew with me, my best friend all my life, and he's not a Christian. And I talked to him 3 or 4 years ago. And I always try to leave with something positive about it. His wife goes to church and he's down for his family. And you ought to go one time, see what it's like. I like it. I mean, it's not a, it's a denomination.
It's sad, right? It's sad. It's not a judgment. It's not that anybody's better than someone else. It's I know how you're designed, and you're not living your best life. Because your best life isn't with Satan. He's not interested in your best life. Your best life is walking with God. That's how you're made. You're His. He made you. He knows what you need. He knows what you need emotionally. He knows what you need physically. He knows what you need spiritually. All right? We shouldn't look at people at sin and say, boy, you know, I'm trying to do what's right. I'm living this boring Christian life. And they're out there living it up. And just doesn't seem fair. But you know, I'm headed to heaven. is my goal. And, you know, we need to really think about how we look at the activities in the world. Right? We need to keep that going. And next week, we're going to look at Luke 15:11-32. We're going to look at the prodigal son, but we're going to look at it in a different way than you normally look at it. Okay? And we're going to look at what happened. We're going to look at the life of the younger brother in this parable. And then we want to look at, I want you to look at the older brother. And not from the part of forgiveness and not from the part of, but how he looks at this situation and his heart, not so much around the forgiveness piece, which is what we usually focus on, which is good to focus on, it's true, but I want you to think about what life did the older brother really have? And what kind of life did he think the younger brother was having? And what kind of life was the younger brother having? And how do we see people and think about people, or even brothers or sisters who go back out into the world, who were with the father, who were in the family, and left? And they're out there, and how are we, when we're here working still in the kingdom, in the family, what are we thinking about them while they're out there whooping it up, right? So next week, we'll we'll take a look at that, because I have we have 2 minutes. Any other comments, questions on anything? Hebrews 12, 1 and 2 tells us that sin easily ensnares us. Right? It easily ensnares us. It clings. It's like a trap that's hard to shed. And so, you know, think this week. Think about the prodigal son. We'll talk about that all next week and the lessons that we can learn there. And we'll go from there.